Welcome back to X-Men Unraveled. I'm Noelle, and today we're continuing with issue number 2 of the X-Men. Last time we saw the X-Men face their first real challenge as a team, and today they meet a new villain, the Vanisher. He's a character that has appeared sporadically over the years, and he has the power to teleport. Unfortunately, we don't really get any backstory about his life, so we'll just start with his first confrontation with the X-Men. After that, I'll cover another story about Angel and his interesting encounter with an Avenger. With that, let's jump into the comics. Picking up from where we left off last time, I'm covering X-Men number 2, published in November of 1963. This issue starts with Professor X sending a message to the X-Men to join him for some important announcement. Apparently, the X-Men were off on some other business because there's a couple of pages of them dramatically racing across town and using their powers to make their way to the X-Mansion. When they arrive in Xavier's study, he tells them that a new threat to humankind has appeared, the Vanisher. Then Xavier uses his telepathy to basically project a movie of the Vanisher onto the wall for the X-Men to watch. The Vanisher is an odd-looking dude. He's bald with goggles and this red and purple hooded suit. So I guess they were making red and purple the standard villain colors. But the hood kind of spreads out around his head and it kind of makes him look like a lizard to me. However he's dressed, we see that he robs a bank, and when the security guards plan to stop him, he disappears into thin air. The X-Men are shocked at what they've seen and ask Xavier if the Vanisher is a mutant. He says he doesn't know, but he thinks so, and tells them that they will be sent to try and stop him. Iceman gets pretty riled up about going to fight another villain and starts shooting snowballs around the room. Remember, he is the youngest member of the team. But Xavier decides to use this as a teaching moment and tells Jean to show how she would defend herself against an attack like that. And she uses her telekinesis to send all of the snowballs flying back at Bobby, but he's able to make an ice shield to protect himself from his own attack. Xavier calls the X-Men back to attention and tells them that they aren't ready to face the Vanisher, so he sends them all to the Danger Room for training. The Danger Room at this point isn't the fancy one like later in the comics or the 90s animated series that simulates environments and threats. It's mostly mechanical traps and challenges to test the X-Men's reactions and creative uses of their abilities. So Xavier puts the X-Men through a bunch of tests, which honestly don't seem super relevant to fighting the Vanisher. But while the X-Men are training, the Vanisher is up to more bullshit. He makes an appearance at the Pentagon where he explains to a man named General Hendershoot that he is a mutant with teleportation powers and he will be back to steal the government's continental defense plans. After this grand announcement, he teleports away again. Apparently, he just wanted to show off, even though it seems like he could have taken the plans right then. But I guess to increase the suspense, he disappears and leaves the general to wonder what will happen next. And the Vanisher does seem to love attention, because he then becomes a celebrity for local criminals. He has gathered a whole group of them to come over to his lair, and they're all cheering him and pledging their support to him. He then announces to them that he believes Homo Superior should rule the world, and as such, he will allow these adoring fans to become his lackeys. Surprisingly, the criminal groupies are totally on board for this, and cheer some more when he reveals his plan to steal the U.S. Continental Defense Plans. Meanwhile, back at the X-Mansion, Xavier still has the X-Men bullshitting around in the Danger Room. I still can't figure out how this training is supposedly prepping them with their fight with the Vanisher. Jean is in the middle of lifting up a giant ball the size of, like, a small studio apartment, but she starts getting tired from using her powers, and it's about to fall right on top of her. So Cyclops uses his beam to blast it out of the way. And these are going to be recurring themes, Jean tiring out almost immediately after using her powers, and Cyclops always wanting to rescue her. Bobby gets jealous of Cyclops and makes an ice horse for Cyclops, saying it's because he wants to be such a gallant Prince Charming. By this time, Xavier is ignoring the X-Men because he's mentally contacting FBI agent Duncan. Last time we saw him, he was giving Xavier files on mutants for him to find and recruit. This time, Duncan is sharing information about the Vanisher and his next move to steal the defense plans. Duncan also puts on a psionic headband that Xavier has given him to amplify his thoughts so Xavier can hear them. Then Xavier mentally hangs up with Duncan after gathering the information and addresses the X-Men, telling them that they are going to Washington, D.C. And Xavier's government contacts are apparently pretty serious at this point because the Department of Special Affairs has given them a fancy new airplane to travel to their missions. I guess it was a reward, maybe, for their assistance against Magneto in the last issue. At the Pentagon, they've come up with a plan to set the Continental Defense Plans in a binder on a table, with four guards around it, one on each side of the table, all with guns, of course. And it seems like a pretty lame plan to me, but that's what they came up with. Unsurprisingly, the Vanisher teleports right on top of the table, grabs the binder, and teleports away before the guards can fire a single shot. He weirdly doesn't teleport very far, just down the hall, so the guards race after him and tackle him, but the Vanisher teleports again, leaving the guards in a pile on the floor. This time, the Vanisher appears right outside the building and directly in front of the X-Men who have just arrived. A fight breaks out pretty much immediately, and it doesn't go well for the X-Men. For a moment, they are able to get the set of documents, but the Vanisher teleports around the fight and eventually uses sleeping gas on Jean, who had managed to kind of grab hold of the documents with her telekinesis, and the Vanisher is able to get the documents back and disappear. And the X-Men don't even get the comfort of losing in secret. The newspapers print the story of their defeat on the front page and start questioning whether or not they're useful heroes after all. Back at the X-Mansion, the defeated X-Men see a news broadcast that the Vanisher is demanding $10 million from the US government, and if they don't pay him, he'll hand over the Continental Defense documents to the communists. And just for the hell of it, I put $10 million into an inflation calculator to see what $10 million in 1963 would be worth today. A cool $90 million. So definitely enough for the Vanisher to retire on. After watching the clip, the X-Men start arguing, taking out their emotions from being beaten by the Vanisher out on each other. But Xavier interrupts them and tells them to stop their childish antics, because it's not like they're actually kids, right? And he says that he needs to enter the fight with the Vanisher so that they can see that brute strength doesn't always win. I don't know, it seems to me like that should have been option number one instead of training them and hyping them up like they could beat the Vanisher on their own in the first place. Personally, I don't think Xavier is actually cut out to be a teacher. The next day, the X-Men arrive back in Washington, D.C. and face off with the Vanisher and his cronies. But this time, Xavier is with them, and he confronts the Vanisher himself. The Vanisher laughs in Xavier's face, but then Xavier uses his telepathy and erases the Vanisher's memory. He starts getting upset and bewildered because he doesn't know where he is, what's going on, or even who he is anymore. And the Vanisher's little gang gets pissed off not knowing what happened to their leader, and they attack the X-Men. It's a pretty quick fight, and the X-Men, of course, beat them easily. The issue ends with Xavier telling his students that they all possess the greatest power on Earth at their disposal, the human mind. Where the Vanisher goes is anybody's guess. The poor villain is now completely confused with no idea who he is. It seems like quite a harsh punishment. This next story comes from Tales of Suspense number 49, written by Stan Lee and illustrated by Steve Ditko. This issue focuses on Angel, Warren Worthington III, and someone we haven't come across in any issues yet, Iron Man. I am personally not a fan of Iron Man. The first few MCU movies and Robert Downey Jr.'s amazing portrayal won me over for a while, but with Civil War, I doubled down on being Team Cap and have basically hated Iron Man ever since. And I'm going to go ahead and assume that everyone knows who he is from the movies, so I'm going to keep his intro brief. Tony Stark is a billionaire genius and owner of Stark Industries, which develops advanced technology related to aerospace and defense. His knowledge and money allowed him to build his armored suit, becoming Iron Man and joining the ranks of superheroes that emerged around the same time. His first appearance is actually in Tales of Suspense number 39, published in March of 1963. In Tales of Suspense number 49, Tony Stark is in the middle of conducting a nuclear experiment at one of his facilities when Warren Worthington III haplessly flies overhead. At first, our boy Angel is starstruck to see Tony suited up as Iron Man below him on the ground, but Tony is desperately trying to get Angel away and out of the path of the imminent explosion. He then flies up to Angel, yelling at him to get away, but Angel can't hear him, and the nuclear explosion goes off, catching Angel in its wake. Stark is safe because his suit protected him. Angel, however, is exposed to all of the radiation. Physically, Angel seems to be fine. Radiation definitely seems to work differently in the Marvel Universe than our own, but it has a strange effect on him mentally. He says to himself that he feels strange, smarter, craftier, slyer, and more evil. With the blast dispersed, Iron Man goes after Angel to see if he needs help, which he most definitely would if this was a real-world radiation exposure. But Angel is just annoyed at being chased and continues to fly away. Unfortunately, Iron Man's jets start giving out from the chase, and he reaches out to Angel to help him, but Angel won't catch him. According to Stark, Angel knows that he's in danger but is intentionally keeping away. And he says as he starts falling, "It's just as I feared. The explosion changed his personality, made him cruel, merciless." And Stark is falling to the ground, fortunately breaking his fall with a magnetic repeller, which slows his plummet. Angel, however, carries on and makes his way back to the X-Mansion, where he makes a startling announcement to his team. He's quitting. And not only that, he is tired of being a good mutant, and he wants to join the bad ones in their fight to rule the Earth. The other X-Men are shocked and can't believe what they're hearing, and they decide that they have to stop him and hold him there until Professor X gets back. Together, they go after him, but he's able to evade all of their attacks and escape the mansion. Then Xavier arrives and stops the X-Men from explaining what happened because he followed the entire incident mentally. So he psychically reaches out to Angel and orders him to return. But Angel says, piss off, he's only taking orders from evil mutants now. I would argue that Professor X fits that bill, but I guess not to Angel. This sends Xavier into a spiral of anxiety that he's failed and maybe he should stop training the X-Men altogether before they all turn against humankind. It's like, Charles, there's definitely issues with creating a child soldier army, but this probably isn't, like, the actual concern. But he composes himself and tells the rest of the X-Men that the most pressing issue is to stop Angel before he joins the evil mutants and takes his X-Men training with them. And again, calm down, Charles. Your low-tech danger room training with Angel probably isn't going to be what gives Magneto the edge to take over the world if Angel joins him. I mean, really. Xavier tells Cyclops to contact the Avengers for help, and the issue says that he broadcasts an urgent appeal over a secret wavelength used only by the X-Men and other specially licensed crime-fighting organizations. So the X-Men seem to have moved up in the world in a mere 2 issues. At this time, the Avengers team includes the Hulk, Thor, Giant Man, Wasp, and Iron Man. But only Iron Man is available to help, so he puts his suit back on and sets out to assist, in part because he feels responsible for Angel's turn to the dark side. Angel, in the meantime, has set out on a mission to find the evil mutants. So he finds a construction site and steals some dynamite, setting off an explosion in the sky above New York City and another in the harbor. You can tell this story was written a long time ago because Angel doesn't spend the rest of his life on a terror watch list for this little stunt, but he's trying to catch the attention of some evil mutants so he can join their crusade. But instead of evil mutants, who the comic says assumed this was a trap, Angel leads Iron Man right to his location. The police are already there, getting ready to shoot Angel out of the sky with rifles, but Iron Man stops them, asking them to give him time to resolve the situation. Cops say he has 10 minutes, so Iron Man races after Angel. Iron Man flies after Angel, asking him to stop and talk. Angel tries to attack him, but ultimately Iron Man is able to stop him and bring Angel back down to the ground. But Angel tricks Iron Man and locks him in a storage building. When Iron Man is finally able to escape, he finds Angel standing on top of a water tower, forlornly wondering why the evil mutants aren't showing up and inviting him into their club. You have to remember, Warren Worthington III was a popular rich kid, so he's probably used to just getting invitations automatically. Iron Man decides that the only way to stop this is to shock Angel back to his regular personality. So he charges straight at Warren on the water tower, grabs him, and flies both of them high up into the sky. But the jets on his suit give out, and he starts falling to the earth. At first, Angel laughs at him and makes a joke that maybe Iron Man can grow wings like him and save himself. But as he's watching Iron Man fall, he starts to feel conflicted. He wants to laugh about it, but he starts feeling guilty. So Angel sets off as fast as he can after the plummeting Iron Man, of course reaching him just before he's about to hit the ground. Once they're both safe, Iron Man explains to Angel and the police that the atomic rays from the Stark Industries test affected Angel's mind, so he wasn't responsible for his actions. Then the X-Men arrive, happy to see their friend back to his old self, and everyone is happy. They all go back to the X-Mansion, and Professor Xavier is busy patting himself on the back. He says that his X-Men program is successful because Angel didn't permit Iron Man to die, even with the influence of radiation. Of course, it could just be that Angel is a decent person and the effects of the radiation were wearing off through no effort of Xavier's. Personally, I find that more likely. Angel says goodbye to Iron Man and offers his assistance anytime Iron Man needs it in the future. And the issue ends with Iron Man returning to his own life. And that's it for our two stories today. They're both pretty silly, to be honest, but the X-Men are just getting started on their careers as superheroes, so we can't hold it against him. And it definitely seems like Professor X did set them up to fail in X-Men number 2, sending them against the Vanisher on their own when he should have known that they would need his powers to stop them. Feels pretty manipulative to me. Like, here, let me train you extra for this mission that you can't win so I can remind you all that you need me. I don't know, I don't like it. Last time I said this was a pro-Magneto podcast. I'm sure you've also noticed it is an anti-Xavier one too. Again, I will not apologize. But the Tales of Suspense story was pretty fun to read, even if it was a little ridiculous. Radiation does not do that. I tend to like crossover issues every once in a while, and Iron Man checks another Avenger off our list. So far, we've come across Captain America and Black Widow as well. That's it for today. Next time, I'll be covering issue number 3 of the X-Men, and we'll meet a villain who's quite a bit more famous than the Vanisher. Until then, don't forget to check out the podcast Instagram at X-Men Unraveled for updates and pictures from the issues I cover in the show. Thank you for joining me. Talk to you next time. And remember not to be a manipulative jerk like Xavier. Bye.